You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Welcome to another edition of Influence, the global podcast that shines a spotlight on the influencer marketing industry. My name is Gordon Glenister. And for those of you that don't know who I am, I'm a keynote speaker, trainer, and consultant in the sector and published author on influencer marketing strategy. Influence is also a proud member of the Marketing Podcast Network, where you can listen to other amazing influencer and marketing related shows. But before we start, please don't forget to subscribe to this show just to make sure that you don't miss a future episode. Now, today I'm talking with Dave Perry, who's the CEO of a new e-commerce partnership network that has got over 30,000 Shopify brands that have joined and providing over 320 million visitors a month. And so we're going to be discussing how creators can monetize more of what they do with their own online shops and start perhaps moving their followers into real customers.
Yeah, I'm originally from the video game industry. That's what I did for my entire career. I got to work on lots of interesting games like the Matrix and the Terminator, Aladdin for Disney. We made a cool character called Earthworm Jim once. And so got to do lots of fun video game things. But my last company was bought by Sony PlayStation. And at the point, I decided to sort of retire and I built this awesome man cave where I have, you know, metalworking and woodworking and 3D printing and all kinds of cool stuff. But I also built a photo studio. And I found that when I took photos in my photo studio, nobody cared. But if I took pictures of influencers, people cared greatly. And, you know, would be bending over backwards to try to meet these people because they want to marry them. And so I found that these people tend to hang out. So they'd be friends of my daughter and they would, between them have maybe 15 million followers. And so you go 15 million people, how many people is that? And if you go to a large concert, like a Wembley Stadium in England or the Rose Bowl here in the United States, you go to a big stadium, it's like a tiny fraction of 15 million. They speak to them every single day. And so this got interesting to me. And that's when I met my co-founder, actually, Jason Goldberg. And Jason and I ended up sort of having this whole discussion on influencers. We were helping students. And we decided to try to build a company to do some cool things in this space. The name Caro is kind of fun because in the e-commerce world, the shopping cart is like the center of the goal of everything, right? Get stuff into your shopping cart and sell it. And so we looked at all the different ways to say cart. And we thought the company was going to be called Carus, which is the Latin word. But what we did is we had influencers coming into our offices and we laid out all of the different names and they chose Caro. So it's actually chosen by influencers. It's just a different way to go about naming your company, but it means cart. And ultimately this space was just fascinating to me because when you're building a studio, you're constantly getting influenced by people who are experts in every subject. And I found myself, some photographer would be doing a YouTube video, this is the best light ever. And then I would buy it and it's like, that's a really great light. That's a great recommendation. And so that was really interesting to me. I sort of, in a way, found myself getting attracted into the space. And then what happened was there was an influencer whose name is Casey Neistat, who's I'm sure you've heard of him at some point. He's a YouTuber. Casey was flying on Emirates Airlines and somebody there, one of the staff realized it was Casey Neistat. So they upgraded him to first class. And he made a video about what it's like to have a shower while you're flying, which I've never even seen before. That was cool. And the video went viral and it's worth, I mean, I can't even imagine what it would have cost to buy the amount of eyeballs that watched that video. My thought was different, which was, what if that person never pointed at Casey? So what if he just checked in and got on the flight? And so what we wanted to do was to try to build the technology that would actually be that person pointing. So as your brand is interacting with influencers, we're like, that's an important person. You should take care of that person. That was our initial idea for our platform. And my daughter's like a small influencer, but it's interesting. She gets offered products all the time, but they're always products from companies that she doesn't use or know or have any interest in. And she doesn't want the stuff. And that's the common interaction with influencers today, is sort of find them and then trouble them and try to get them to do what you want them to do. And then when some of them agree, then you start putting all these restrictions on them. You have to sign this contract and you can't use anybody else's shampoo. And you're not allowed to write the words yourself because we can write them better. And it's like, are you kidding me? This is not the way to interact with these people. Who am I? I'm this dude from the video game industry, but I'm looking at the space going, there's some room for us to operate here. I think we can help. And so that's what got me to sort of cross over from video games into the e-commerce space. And the more that we investigated this space, honestly, the more interesting it became and the more time we spent with influencers. I'll give you an example. Is my daughter was having dinner with a group of her friends. And of course, the parents are talking. But one of the girls at the table is an influencer and she's making about $30,000 a month, 12 years old. She showed us a video of a hotel room that she was staying in that some agency had filled with makeup. And when I say filled, I'm talking every surface, the bed cover, everything was covered in makeup. And this 12-year-old doesn't wear makeup. And so they just thought it was funny. They go in their hotel room, it's filled with stuff. They take video of it and then they throw it all in the trash. And I thought to myself, this is not ideal because there's someone paying an agency to put that stuff in the hotel room is being told this is the best idea ever. And it's not the best idea ever. And so this girl was sitting with the other girls and she had this white backpack and someone said, I really like your backpack. And she ended up going literally on and on and on, gushing about this backpack. It's my favorite. I take it everywhere I go. I absolutely love this backpack. I'm thinking to myself, I want to be that backpack company. I don't want to be in the hotel room just getting thrown in the trash. So this authenticity, connecting influencers with things that they love, is really, I think, actually critical. Once we started to do this, Facebook ended up writing a success story on our company for the authenticity. I really think that's necessary because what you'll find is if you're selling makeup and the influencer you're talking to is wearing your makeup on their face right now, that's a very good conversation, right? They are very happy to have this call. They're very happy to have this discussion because they don't have to pretend to like something. They don't have to lean up against a package of something they would never buy and put their face by it and try to get you to buy it. They don't want to do that.
Yeah. I think it's really interesting what you say, David, because I think great influence is when these content creators would have gone and bought the product of their own volition. So, you know, I always say that a creator's most important challenge should always be to nourish and grow their audience. Because if they're not doing that, they're going to lose that follower base. They're going to lose the potential opportunity to get bigger brand deals because they haven't got the engagement that they once did. So, you know, smart creators only work with brands that resonate with their values. And I really don't understand how companies just literally send out stuff to people that they think, oh, well, here's a bunch of influencers. You know, it's the spray and pray approach that, you know, you do get with traditional marketing and advertising. And it's so pointless, isn't it? Because, you know, think of the waste that you've just been talking about with this cosmetics. And if people had did more thought about this, they could get such higher levels of response and engagement.
Yeah. So I try to remind brands that influencers are not billboards. It's very easy to think of them as just billboards and they're going to say whatever I want to say with whatever imaging I want. I'm in complete control. You're like, but hold on a minute. This person has got way bigger following than your brand, right? And they're killing it and they're worth a lot of money and they're creative and they understand their audiences intimately. And so just to come in and say, you know, be a billboard for me is not really that interesting to them. And so the dirty little secret is, you know, you don't have a great relationship with your influencers if the first chance they get to delete your post, it's gone.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you're like, we are great at working with influencers. Well, if they're deleting your post, that's probably showing that they're not really loving this relationship.
Yeah. And if they keep it for a longer time, then it's the longer form engagement that you can. I mean, if you think about some posts, they've been up for 6 months, even a year after the campaign's finished, which could continually keep delivering opportunities for that brand, couldn't they? Even after that campaign's finished.
Yes, hardcore fans go all the way down the list. And so looking at everything. So without question, it's good to remain in the feed. And so what we found is that influencers, and this is the shocking part, is out of 100% of influencers, obviously the most successful ones, the Kim Kardashians and the Paris Hiltons, they all have brands and they all grow those brands. And so what they're actually building is a customer database, not a list of followers. So you're like, yeah, it's all about the followers. It's not. It's about how many customers you have. So the ones that are driving around in Rolls Royces are the ones that have customers, not followers. Followers are fantastic, great, love it, but customers are better. So then you say to yourself, well, what percentage of influencers have actual customers? Like, meaning they have actually transacted with them and they are in their customer database as customers and they know what they bought and they can recontact them and things like that. And the answer is probably less than 1%.
I can believe it's low, but that's really low, isn't it? 1%.
It's really low. It's really low. Why? Because a lot of them are sending out affiliate clicks. And so I get moms will say to me, I got a merch deal. And I'm like, really? That's great. I hope it's your own store. And they're like, no, I just send all the traffic to somebody else. And in which case, that merch company is now, of course, owning all the customers.
So the lifetime value is with that company, you know, way after the influencers has finished. They're getting that reoccurring revenue, which the influencer isn't benefiting from.
Yeah, so Amazon's a good example. They publish their numbers. They pay 3-5% on the major categories that influencers influence in, and they keep the customers. And so what you find is that influencers have been doing this for years. They've been sending their traffic away using codes or links or something. And then sometimes they're getting paid, you know, some kind of fee for what they're doing, but they always question the fee. Like, it's never quite what you expect it to be. I did the posts and the sales weren't what I expected them to be. Well, you know, then are you going to go audit the brand? I mean, that's actually seriously, you're going to go and audit the brand. So the idea of you being the influencer that keeps the customer, then you actually have a perfect record of the sale because you made the sale. It was your sale. So this changes everything. The other thing that's kind of interesting is there's a temporal piece that people never talk about with influencers. And what that means is time matters. So if an influencer posts a video to YouTube and they say, the equipment I use is the GoPro 4, then that video, they never go back and fix that, right? So they never, ever go back to that YouTube video and fix it. We're now at the GoPro 10. So if you buy a GoPro 4, sorry, right? And you know people will. I actually had a photographer friend did that. He put all of his equipment on a list and he ended up, people would be buying this old equipment. And he's like, I haven't updated that in ages. And so in reality, they're buying old equipment. And so this is not good. So if an influencer has a store, that store is current. They only put the stuff in there that they actually want today. And that means that if they point everything to that central point, then that central point can represent everything that matters to them, the charities that they care about, the products that they want to sell, the latest things that they're promoting. That can all be, you know, meet me at this event, or I'm going to VidCon or whatever. It can all be on their central site, but then they can point all their stuff at it. When you actually take apart an influencer, when you look at their world, you'll find that they've done all these different deals over time. They did a book deal, they did a product deal, they did a merch deal. Nothing's connected. It's all over the place. You know, the bio for a moment was pointing over here, and now it's pointing over there, and now it's pointing over here. I didn't know you had a book, right? They haven't pulled all this together. So that's why owning stores for influencers, I think, is going to be critical going forward. And I think it's a huge opportunity for brands.
I do too. Yeah. No, and it's really interesting to say. I mean, have you got some great case studies or some examples of ones that have really, really taken off? I'd love to hear one or two.
Yeah. So we're finding in the influencer space, the ones that we demonstrate are ones that I think are actually kind of fun to see influencers use this technology that we've created in an innovative way, meaning that what we did is we decided that influencers really don't want to have inventory. So they don't want warehouses. They don't want logistics problems and all this stuff. So there had to be a way to connect the influencer and the brand where the influencer would actually own the store, sell the product, but then their partner, the supplier, the people who make the e-bike, for example, would then sell the product. So an example would be if you go to a website called Teddy and Bear, that's Teddy, T-E-D-D-Y, and B-E-A-R, you'll see this is an Olympic gold medalist and an NFL player. They have kids, so they decided to build a brand selling kids' items. And this is a really nice example where you can see these products that they've got from partner brands, but they're able to actually start building a real brand themselves. And they own this. This is their brand. And so it's really fun to see that. There's another one that we like is Olive Lane. It's olive-lane.com. This is a momfluencer. So it's sort of kitchen and kids, but she's done such a gorgeous job of building a collection of items that she really likes. And so there's a curation aspect to this too. And I think that's something that influencers forget is that they're tastemakers. You might want to be selling someone some sunglasses. That's what you're being told to sell. But no matter what, they're looking at the other parts of the picture too. I just saw my daughter posted a picture of her with a giraffe, and it's all about the giraffe. Like, here's a picture of a head of a giraffe and she's touching it. And then I look in the comments and someone goes, I love the pants that you're wearing. And it's like, that's what is happening to influencers constantly, is people are looking at the rest of the picture. You know, you're trying to sell the sunglasses, but they want the handbag. They are tastemakers. And so that curation is actually very important, because we have really cool brands on our platform like Super 73, which do electric bikes. They're unbelievable electric bikes. And so if you're an influencer, it's your job to work out in the world of electric bikes, if you're going to sell them, which ones are the coolest, right? Which ones are really cool? And if you do that, your followers are going to love what you're doing. I think there's a big mistake that people think that merch today, it always has to have your logo on it. So like everything has to have your name. Like if you sell sunglasses, it has to have your name printed on the sunglasses somewhere. That's actually not the case. Your tastemakers, every single thing you wear, as you're walking away, people are looking at your shorts going, I love those shorts, right? And then they don't care what the brand is. They just think they're cool. And you obviously like them because you wear them, and they'll find out the brand later. Like they'll literally start searching and trying to find that out. So that's why I think it's so important that the influencers think this way. So what we've effectively done is we've built Caro as a technology that allows the influencers and the brands to partner, so the influencers can sell their products in the influencer store.
Does it cost them much to set up? So from an influencer's point of view, and say you've got somebody listening to this is a, you know, somebody that's got maybe 20,000 followers on Instagram, is interested in developing a range of, I don't know, lingerie or a range of something. And it could be, of course, existing products that are out in the market. All the store is allowing it is for them to curate stuff, isn't it? They don't have to design their own range. It's just bringing them together, isn't it, from various sources. So what happens next? Talk to me through the process.
Well, if you have a store already, it's easy. You just partner with any brand that's on Shopify. So we're on the Shopify platform. I should be clear on that. So there's about 2 million brands on Shopify. Anyone can partner with anyone as long as both sides have Caro. Caro is like a bridge that connects the two together, and then they can do business. If anyone knows anyone else on Shopify that they like, then we're good to go. And there's lots and lots of great brands on Shopify. Even people like Netflix have Shopify stores these days. The Shopify platform is great. Now, if you don't have a store, then you have two choices. One is to build it yourself, which honestly is actually quite easy, but some people will be like, I just don't know how to build a store. So the first question is, well, what does it cost to actually have a store on Shopify? And the answer is $30 a month. The thing that's stopping you having your customers is $30 a month right now. So you've got to do that. Just don't hesitate. Do that. Then there are templates for the store. So if you're creative, which most influencers are, they can actually put this together themselves. But let's say you actually want a really, really amazing site with full branding and everything else. Then there's lots and lots of people out there, e-commerce store developers. If you just Google them, you'll find them, e-commerce store, Shopify developer. Or if you want to make it even easier, just go to experts.shopify.com. There's lots of them on there. They handle everything. So let's say I want someone to build the site for me. Go to experts.shopify.com. I want someone to run it for me and just do everything. I don't want to ever look at it, right? Then experts.shopify.com. They solve all of those different problems, whatever they are, you know? And so the result of it is the core piece of it is that just you have to start, and starting is just signing up. I think there might even be a free trial for a certain period of time, but it's $30 a month. I think most influencers can afford it. Then it's all about getting the right partnerships. Our team is available to help discuss and make recommendations or introductions. But ultimately, the bigger the influencer, the more every brand is going to want to work with her.
With these guys and girls that are really making it on the shops, what sort of money are they making a month?
It depends on how many products they add, but they can make hundreds of thousands a month by doing this if they're selling stuff that is of some value. So it's not like coffee or something smaller, but if it's something where they're actually selling real products that have value, then they're going to make quite a lot of money from it. And it's not that coffee can't sell. I just had a call with a coffee company actually. So coffee companies, when you put multiple products together, you know, with the coffee makers and the filters and the oat milk, we have Oatly on our platform. You know, when you put all of this together, then actually you can create bundles. So that's something else we offer is bundles. Why does that matter? Because influencers like to make outfits. And so why not sell the whole outfit? That's actually quite common, by the way, is influencers don't realize how valuable their ability to put things together is.
I know. I hear you exactly. And when you think about the, you know, some of the skilled people in retailing and some of that, what they do, and they would die for the audiences that some of these influencers have. So you've got skilled retailers that haven't got necessarily the audiences with influencers that don't know the value of what they've already got. It's quite electric, isn't it, to see how this is going to grow and grow and grow, that as it starts with the big ones really, you know, making this sort of revenue per month, I think that's going to cascade down and more people. I mean, we've already seen the success of live stream selling in Asia. It's exploded, isn't it, into, you know, millions of dollars that are being made. And I think that's coming, you know, influencers are really the new retailers now, more than ever. So, wow, God, I could talk about this for ages.
We are fans of a thing called Comment Sold. Have you heard of that one? Comment Sold is very interesting for influencers to be able to sell products live. This live selling is very important. So there's this core concept of you becoming the retailer and not the affiliate. So you're actually selling the thing. Here's the twist. And this is the fun part of the question is, when you actually found someone and got them to like your scarf and then go to Amazon and buy it, are you really an affiliate or are you technically the retailer? Because you actually, in a way, found the person out on the cold internet and got them to want to buy the thing. Now, yes, the transaction got closed by Amazon, which is why they keep the customer. But in reality, on our platform, we call you the retailer because you actually did close the sale and it happens in your store and the customer goes into your customer database. So therefore you're the retailer. That changes everything because that gives you the retailer cut. And the retailer cut is usually about 5 to 10 times more than the affiliate fee. So it's a complete game changer when you start to get the retailer cut. You become the Nordstrom in that scenario. The analogy I use is your competitors are collecting followers and you're collecting customers. Those customers, trust me, if you want to be a real retailer, Nordstrom's actually a pretty good example where they're curating and choosing things and growing partnerships with different brands. Why can't you do that too? And just use technology to do it.
Wow. I could talk about this for ages and it's really a fascinating subject, but I'm very keen to let people know how that they can get hold of you, David. So give us some of your links and connections.
Best way to get hold of us is to go to getcaro.com. So getcaro.com. And if you email hello@getcaro.com and you mention this podcast, we will give you VIP support. You'll get They'll roll out the red carpet for you. So just make sure to mention this podcast.
Oh, wonderful. Thank you so much. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Really fascinating insight. Speak again soon, eh?
Yeah, thanks so much. This was fun.
This podcast is supported by the Branded Content Marketing Association, promoting the value of influencer marketing globally.
That's it for another edition of Influence. Please don't forget to subscribe to the show and give me your feedback, which is gordon@gordonglanster.com. Or you can follow me on LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, where you can also ask me a question. And if you're able to give us a 5-star review, we really do appreciate that. And if you want help in creating an influencer marketing strategy or want to join the Influencer Marketing Roundtable weekly event, please head over to gordonglanster.com. And if you want to find out about our shows, and then you can head over to marketingpodcastnetwork.net. Thanks as always to my producer, Neil Whiteside from Freedom One. And until next time, from me, Gordon Glenister, it's bye for now.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.